folks. Welcome to the show, Exile Minds Podcast. Today, Saturday, the 26th of November, 2022. Just gone 11 a.m. for me, broadcasting in England. How you all doing? Have you had a nice week? A bit of an impromptu show today, not really scheduled. I planned to put one out earlier this week and been a bit busy. But you'll see why, because it kind of ties into the reason for the show today. So yeah, I'll say my... did a show with Mike last weekend, and he's took a week off. I was going to jump in and sort of, you know, grab some of his listeners, but I've been busy. I thought I definitely want to get one out this week, as maybe as a bonus for those listeners that have been starved as well, that also inspired this show in its inception. So we're back. We're doing it properly now. I'm just going to mute my phone there. There we go. Get that on silent. And see, I'm still new to this. But yeah, today's show, Exile Minds Podcast, of me, your host, Liam Martin. Or as some people say, the famous Liam Martin. Or the mighty Rohan. They're not labels I put on. But yeah. But yeah, that's me. Today we're going to have a show on got a Kurosmos article. It caught my attention because, well, they've got a discovery of a new pyramid and a new queen, okay? Pyramid and a queen that's completely missing from the records. So I thought that was a pretty interesting one, especially for me. It kind of segued because this show was sort of inspired by kind of noticing things and being mindful, being present, and that thing where you kind of... you know, there's an appreciation for a process to stuff. And, yeah, I just figured, well, I'll do a bit of a show on that because I've got a garden and I've been digging in my garden and I found some stuff in my garden. So I was kind of feeling a bit like an archaeologist. So, yeah, I mean, I went to my garden a couple of days, 2 days ago, and this is how the show premise came. So I went earlier. And it was still dark, trying to utilize the light because it's winter hours. Nothing seemed to be around. It's a slow Wednesday. So I'm thinking, all right, got this slow Wednesday going on. Goes down my garden, starts digging up a load of weeds, clearing it around the back, finds a bit of a wall. Okay. So I'm digging away. It's raining. I thought, you know, hours and hours, just getting really muddy. So I went home, came back to England. You know, you get a lot of rain. Got to work around it. So what I did was, I goes back later and just started digging where I found a few bricks. And there's bricks everywhere, just chucked down there hardcore and that. But I start to notice in a bit of a line. And then there's like another line, the parallels, and seeing they're going deeper and deeper. And it's like I'm making a discovery, you know. So I returned and so light was failing me. So it goes back the next day. There's loads of junk and hardcore. I knew there's a load of rubbish at the back. But as I'm going through the foliage, say I found these two parallel walls and then a bit of a bricked paved floor, like really good bricks. Not bricks, like, you know, paving blocks from back in the day. I thought, started to feel it. I had a little dustpan that I used down there. So I started to feel a bit like Daniel Jackson doing archaeology and stuff. You know, and you have to be careful as well. Some of these bricks are deteriorating. So you're whacking with a spade, start breaking apart, and it just looks like kind of clay soil. So yeah, it got me thinking about that stuff. So I thought, isn't it interesting that, you know, all these people, I'm trying to piece together the way this is laid out, this allotment, so I can see what might be there and where I can potentially build stuff. But isn't it interesting, it's like you've got to put these pieces together, I was thinking, and sometimes they can be major and sometimes not. And you won't necessarily even know until, like, afterwards you get an overall view or hindsight and see where it kind of fits. So I got thinking, well, that means that any of us just literally digging around might find something really important. You know, maybe its significance won't even be recognised, and maybe not. But, yeah, it just got me thinking and wondering about the past. And then, yeah, what can we still rediscover? And stuff from the past, you can find something, like in your garden or on a dig, and it could change history. in a sense, you know. So it's like, well, you know. So I've been digging around, kind of accidentally doing a bit of archaeology, thinking how it can impact on the physical world, finding something from the ancient past. You know, like finding foundations, like both in a historical sense and new philosophies and thinking can come from it. So I thought, okay, let's go home then. Did all this digging, went back the next day, find a bit more. I recorded it and made a special little video to sort of show you, like, it's only a few minutes, but you can sort of see I'm practicing what I preach, and that's what sort of inspired it. So I think we'll get to that. I'll play this video, and then we'll see what you think. We'll come back. But yeah, the premise of the show was this thing about I'm digging in the ground, in the dirt, and it's a bit like digging for information, and it gives you information, and it's like, yeah, I think I can tie this in. And then when I went home, lo and behold, I types in to see if anything's been dug up in archaeology recently, and voila, you know, just a few days old, like a shopkeeper called Mr. Ben, a Curiosmos article appears as if by magic. So it's from the 21st of November, so it's only a few days old. But yeah, I'm going to play this, I'll play this video, and then you can have a look, see what you think, and yeah, we'll come back.
Living 14,000 years didn't make me a genius. I just had time.
Time. Can't see it, can't hear it, can't weigh it, can't measure it in a laboratory. It is a subjective sense of becoming what we are instead of what we were a nanosecond ago, becoming what we will be in another nanosecond. The whole BC time is a landscape existing before and behind us, and we move through it. Slice by slice.
Clocks measure time.
No, we measure themselves. The objective referent of the clock is another clock.
It's very interesting. What is it going to do with you?
Oh, he might be a man who lives outside of time.
That work. It's all going to be worth it. Find Lost City of Gold. Let me tell you. Oh, no. What's this? We've been ransacked. It must have been an alphabet agency. We're getting too close to truth.
There's one medicine
for me. You get away. I should get it.
This tutorial complex goes on forever, lad. Gonna need grant money.
have a break.
So, yeah, I found some block paving lot, and I found this one here. If I just pause it, let's go back a bit. I found this this bit of a kind of, yes, these parallel walls, and it's like a bit of a gully down there, you know. So I thought it's quite interesting. All this wall along that one side and on the other side. So I tried to figure out how it's laid out, and it looks like it's laid out as a sort of terrace, you know. So the back where the fence is, there's some trees here that appear to be in a bed, and terraces down and terraces more. And then there's a gully at the bottom for drainage. And the block pipe paving is on one side. And I noticed that curious single block on its own when I was digging, expecting it to carry on like a path. And it didn't. It stopped. And I thought, yes, probably about our archaeologists ago. They hit a dead end. But I thought, well, I'll dig outwards, away from it all. Because I know it seems to go all the way back as far as the fence. So I thought, well, I'd dig the opposite direction, a bit counterintuitive, and then discovered this gully under there. And I thought, oh, now it makes sense. You have a bit of drainage there, and you've got these tiered beds in front, so you can all drain in there. And so I'm thinking I can have a flower bed then either side, and you've got the bit at the back, and where that wall is, there's actually someone's plonked some raised beds backed up against it. So it's like, oh, that whole area has all got this amazing drainage then that I didn't even know about. That's good to know. It's a nice discovery. And it sort of takes you back through history. And it's like these allotment plots built in England, they were built during the Second World War. And so it's not that old, but it's still some old stuff. And they might have been there from before. Some of them have been there since at least the sort of mid-1800s kind of thing. You know, and where I'm from in Nottingham, where this is, it's we've got the oldest ones, I think, in the country are still left being worked. I think they've been around for a while, and during the Second World War, for the war effort, they all got revamped, and then they encouraged people to grow their own food, whatnot. So that's quite interesting to sort of link it together. You can see that I've done a bit of digging myself, just by chance, you know, digging the garden. Ready, preparing it for next spring, next growing season. But it shows you can find stuff. And so I got thinking about archaeology, but I just thought that'd be interesting to show you, so you can have a bit of a look. You know, practice what you preach, as they say. Money where your mouth is. So anyway, yeah, let's have a look at this Kurosmos article, because I thought this gets me somewhere. And so it ties into what I've actually been doing. So, yeah, we'll have a look at this then. So it raised a few questions for me. Comes across this article. So it's that easy. Just look it up. Just go and find something. I just went into a regular browser search, just typed, archaeology discoveries. I think that was it. Just the search term. Just those two basic things. And then leads me to this article, which we'll get through in a minute. So let's have a look then. Headline. That's the complex of Saqqara. That's where it's been discovered. And we'll get into a bit of a discussion about Saqqara. But yeah, the headline, Kurosmos, great source. It says, archaeologists find new ancient pyramid. Well, that's always sounds nice, doesn't it? That's a bit of a headline, attention-grabbing headline there. Okay, let's scroll down. The pyramid belonged to Queen Neith. I'm not sure how you say this. Neith. What's peculiar about this is that she's completely missing from the historical records. And it's obviously going to be curious, hence it's on Kurosmos. But yeah, curious, missing from the records. Okay, so reading the article. Archaeological site of Saqqara continues to reveal its secrets. The site is home to what is believed to be the oldest pyramid in Egypt, the Step Pyramid of Djoser. That's not the one that's been discovered. That's just there. That's there anyway. That's this here, the Step Pyramid of Djoser. Just zoom in a bit. Yeah. It's pretty relatively famous. Obviously not as famous as the big ones, but yeah, that's step ones. pretty well known. So that's in Saqqara, that's in the zone sort of thing. That's this whole area, this whole complex. You can kind of see it in the background. But yeah, so it's this area of Saqqara, the Fandenu Pyramid, and it's in that area where the Step Pyramid of Djoser is, built during the Third Dynasty. Okay, it's also home to many other ancient structures, like the Serapeum. The Serapeum at Saqqara is really interesting, so we'll have a bit of a mention there a bit later on. But yeah, carrying on, continuing with the article. It's home to ancient structures like the Serapeum, home to those massive stone boxes. Now archaeologists have unearthed a never-before-known pyramid of an ancient Egyptian queen. They also have come across a cache of coffins, mummies, and artifacts, as well as a series of interconnected tunnels that there always seems to be. The archaeological site of Saqqara is located about 20 miles, that's 32 kilometers, south of Cairo. Has been the focus of archaeologists' efforts for the past 2 years. Coffins and mummies recently discovered have belonged to King Tut's closest advisors and generals during his reign in the year 1333 BC to 1323 BC. Okay, so Teti and the New Kingdom. In addition, archaeologists analysed a nearby pyramid that belonged to Teti, the first Egyptian king of the 6th dynasty. During the New Kingdom, people wanted to be buried near Teti since he was worshipped as a god. Okay, so this Teti is supposed to be a god, according to Life Science and Ziawas. It was the, obviously, Egyptologist Ziawas and former Egyptian Minister of Antiquities. Okay, he's been the mouthpiece, the spokesperson for this for a long time, Ziawas, if you've not heard of him. So yeah, in Saqqara, however, it's predominantly known to have burials from the Old Kingdom or Late Period. A total of 22 interconnected shafts ranging from 30 to 60 feet, it's 9 to 18 metres, have been found. All with burials from New Kingdom. 300 beautiful coffins from the New Kingdom period were buried within these shafts, along with a huge limestone sarcophagus. I had a look around for that. I couldn't find this huge limestone sarcophagus, but they all tend to be pretty huge. So let's just call it a sarcophagus. Ancient mummies. The ancient mummies that have been found. This is the first New Kingdom burial found in the area. Okay, so it's significant because unknown queen, new pyramid, and the first New Kingdom burial found in this area. So it is entirely unique, said Awas, which it is. There are unique faces on the coffins, distinguishing men from women. And they are decorated with scenes from the Book of the Dead. Okay, the rites of passage to the afterlife. The deceased name is also placed on each coffin. The four sons of Horus often appear to protect the deceased organs. It was even more shocking when the researchers lifted the lids of the coffins to discover that the mummies were still in good condition after all these years. Awas says the mummification had reached its peak during the New Kingdom. So this is a period of time when, you know, they're getting good at that. That's why they're well preserved. But going on to... Oh, might sign up one day. It's a great site, this, as I might actually sign up. But yeah, the Pyramid of the Unknown Queen piece, though, comes in, where it says, according to him, Ziawas, various artifacts have been found inside the coffins and shafts of the tombs, including ancient games, such as a sinet. So I thought, oh, I'd never heard of that, and I thought, check that out. It goes on, there's statues of a Ptah Sokar, which reminded me of, hang on a minute, that's two names I know in sci-fi. Ptah and Sokar. Sokar is featured in Stargate as one of the Goa'uld that decides to take on the persona of, like, the devil. It's interesting. and that's like the Book of the Dead stuff, like rites of passage stuff. And Ptah was is a name that's mentioned amazingly, believe it or not, by alleged contactee Billy Meyer. So he was one of the Ptah was one of the people that ended up, if that old narrative and stories to be believed, he was one of the people that ended up educating Billy Meyer during the height of his sort of abductions. I think he moved on to meeting Ptah after working with some other people, Semyaza and that. But yeah, he was supposed to be high ranking. So I thought that kind of raised a flag or a light in my head, even if it's just for an unusual coincidence, because Ptah, from that Maya narrative, is like sort of high and spiritual. And in fact, Semyaza, who was ranked below Ptah, she was considered an Ishwish, like a kind of master of wisdom. It's almost like you're halfway to enlightenment kind of thing, and Ptah is above that. So it's interesting that enlightenment usually means upwards, and Sokar is going down. So I think, isn't that interesting, the way the words work together? And that kind of is that as above, so below thing going on. And this is, you know, this is Egyptian burial rites kind of thing. So I'm thinking, yeah, that's actually quite interesting. It spins me upside down. But yeah, so anyway, I'll carry on reading this article. I just thought it was interesting that Ptah is like upwards and Sokar's like sort of down, like the Satan and the Stargate franchise. But anyway, yeah, going on. Yeah, the fan figurines and statues of Ptah and Sokar, and even an army's soldiers' metal axe, as if you're taking a weapon to the afterlife, right? Because that's the whole premise of this. You bury this stuff, you're going to take it with you. Okay, but more importantly, the archaeologists also found a pyramid dedicated to an unknown queen. As it was revealed, the pyramid belonged to a queen by the name of Neith, N-E-I-T-H. Neith. What's peculiar is it is completely missing from the historical records, as mentioned earlier. So this discovery will rewrite what we know about Egyptian history, adding a previously unknown queen to the records is obviously gonna swizz the records around a bit, right? So, all right, I've got this pyramid of Doja. So I got thinking, well, hang on, this gets a few questions coming up for me. So first of all, it's like, well, I asked myself, well, what questions is this going to bring up then? I'm like, well, okay, so what's this pyramid? Who is it? You know, what's the deal? Where is it? So, okay, we've got the found a pyramid and a queen with some artifacts in a game called Senet, and it's in Saqqara, which is seems to be a really interesting place. Keeps spitting out new stuff for us. And we've just found there, reading that article, that's New Kingdom stuff, but there's also Middle and Old Kingdom stuff there. So there's a whole range of the stuff we know about of Egypt. A lot of it has been found in the whole complex of Saqqara. And of course, we mentioned the Serampium. That's a very fascinating place, which I'm going to have a bit of a talk about later. So it's in a prime spot. So in a prime spot where things are getting spat out, we've got an unknown queen. Historical context, it's like Late Kingdom stuff, when they're primed in the peak of doing the mummification. Okay, so it's like, refine that stuff a lot, and I think that comes in with what they're trying to do, which will sort of unravel. And so I wondered, what is it, give us any clues where to look next? Obviously, there's an inherent lack of information with some of this stuff, because she's an unknown queen. But I was wondering, why does this matter? I think, well, yeah, this... obviously, it matters. There's an inherent lack of information, so we have to keep digging into it, right? But then at the same time, there's also this sort of thing about, like, how do we piece all this stuff together? So she's completely missing from the records, and she's in this important spot, and we've got these interconnected tunnels, huge limestone sarcophagus, and this game. Well, I got wondering about, well, what is this game, you know? And I'm like, well, let's go and sort of check it out. And then sort of, you know, see if it gives us any like additional clues, you know? So let's have a quick look at this. I've got a Wikipedia entry here. I'll just get the old page up. So I've got this this description of this game. Sanet. And so it says, you know, so like a little board game, little kind of figurine. This game is, it says Sanet is an ancient board game. Its full ancient name was Sanet Nethab. Get a bit stargatey with that. Sanet Nethab Tek Mate Master Britek. But yeah, Sanet Nethab, which means game of passing through. So straight away, I think, okay. Putting a weapon in there with them. You've got the Egyptians are well known for like putting the stuff in there to take to the afterlife. They're preserving themselves, hoping to keep the body preserved well to go into the afterlife. And they're even putting a board game in there, which is a game about called passing the game of passing through. Because the game is about from getting from one end of the board to the other. But of course, obviously, threaded through the entire culture of ancient Egypt, that was always about going through life to get to this point, this big thing to go up, you know, in your spiritual afterlife. But anyway, reading on in the article, I'll zoom in a bit so you can, the viewers can see. Sanet is an ancient board game. Okay, it was the first definite appearance of this game comes from the 3rd dynasty, and the earliest boards we have come to find is from the Middle Kingdom. This game was played and enjoyed by commoners and nobles alike. The only difference being the materials used in the board game, it would change over time, and the pieces and that. King Tutankhamun was buried with four of the Sanet boards made of precious materials like ebony, wood and ivory, and less expensive boards made like pottery and stuff. I thought, okay. I've got this game, telling you about this game. But then I thought, well, okay. Is it like an afterlife game? And get this, Tutankhamun have four. And this whole thing, it seems, is with the Egyptian culture about passing through, going through your life, living a certain way, to aim for this big thing at the end. And Tutankhamun's got four. And I just thought, I don't know if it's related, but why would you need four of them? You've got, you know, only one person to be passing through. I don't know. And how many games can you play? You don't normally play two games of Scrabble at the same time, do you? You don't normally play four games of Monopoly at the same time. I think, why has he got four? You know, is that to do with cardinal points and direction and where you're going and where you're fixed and something to do with your spiritual stuff? I just thought I wasn't going to look this up with a game, but I just thought I'd never heard of it. I'd have a quick chike. And then that little snippet from this article on Otago Museum. Yeah, I just thought that's maybe that fits in. I say it's another bit of digging, like archaeological diggeroodly. There might be nothing, but yeah, four of them, four cardinal points. Maybe. I mean, the pyramids are lined up well with that. Your direction matters. You got feng shui. There's a whole science behind it. Well, the Eastern science behind that stuff, or philosophical, whatever it's considered. So I don't know. Just wondered. You know, putting these threads. But then, lo and behold, another Curiosmos article, which I think might be written by the same guy, actually. More mysteries of the pyramids, because as I'm pulling and reminding myself, because I've not studied Egyptology for a long time, it's been a while. So I'm thinking, okay. Oh, net's gone a bit, but I'm thinking, okay then. What's the deal here? Because I'm not sure what was going on, so I thought I'd refresh myself. Got this new discoverer, trying to see where she fits into all of this, and say I'm not like up on it that much. So I thought I'll just refresh my memory with this stuff. And lo and behold, I found, say, Kuros Moss, another article. They've got, okay, so recently, just to segue into this, recently, not only have I been digging in my garden and then did a find, but I started watching this TV show called 1899, right? And this 1899 TV show is it brings the mystique of pyramids. It's about, this ship in 1899. And it's got this sister ship, and it's gone missing. And while they're out at sea, they think they get a signal from it. So they've got to investigate, and it's all mysterious. And there's a mysterious boy with is holding a little pyramid. So I thought, it all kind of ties in together. Because I've been digging, ended up doing some quote-unquote archaeology in a sense. Been watching this show, which features a pyramid. And then, look this up, and that's what came through. And then I... So, that's like synchronicities. But then I made a discovery that's like well known in Egyptology circles. It's a mystery. It's a big mystery in the Great Pyramid of Giza. And I didn't know about this, an extra mystery on top of all the other mysteries. So there's an extra additional mystery going on with the Great Pyramid, which is that they've been scanning pyramids. And I'm thinking, wouldn't it be great just to kind of scan it like you do with a radar and stuff? And you kind of like scan it. And it turns out that they have. Okay. Okay, so here, look, you can see. This is the, obviously, you see the one edge of the pyramid there. If you can see the sort of chamber bits. So you've got this big grand gallery. So let's have a look then. So this one's from, I say it's years old, this is posted 28th of November 2019. So it's a few years old, this. But I didn't know about this. Just sticking with Egypt, but moving away from the discoverer for a minute. Because there's another discoverer. I found this quite fascinating. So this whole section here, where it says, 40 metres, if you're watching, they've got an image up, and it shows you a kind of computer graphic scan. Scanning through the pyramids, you can see the main chamber going up, and then, but then there's this area above it that's thought to be about 40 meters long, and it's just there's a void there. I don't know what it is. Okay, so let's go on and read this article. I'll zoom in a bit more. Okay, so new scans of the Great Pyramid confirm major discovery inside. This is an article by Ivan Petrichevich. I think it did the last one as well, actually, if it's still loaded up. Give him kudos. Yeah, Ivan Petrichevich. So he's done two good ones there, so, kudos on that. So, yeah, new scans of the Great Pyramid confirm major discovery inside. New scans revealed unprecedented details about the internal structure of the Great Pyramid of Giza. The so-called Big Void inside the pyramid is now measured at 40 meters in length. Its contents remain a profound mystery. Okay, 2 years ago, a group of scientists from around the world used a revolutionary technology to study the Great Pyramid of Giza. Oh, little computer blip there. Okay, so there was... So they made this discovery 2 years ago, like I say. Experts were hoping to discover new details that may lead to a better understanding of how the pyramids are built, right? Obviously. You want to know how they're built and such. You want to check it out. There's still loads of mysteries about it. But a group of scientists has scanned the pyramids looking for previously unknown chambers. All right, so fair enough. That's what we want to do. We had scanning abilities. We're totally going and scanning stuff and... Yeah, that's one of the first places I'd go anyway. Egypt. But yeah, anyway. The group of scientists scanned the pyramids, say, looking for previously unknown chambers. Although, we've still not discovered what tools and technologies the ancient builders used, we found that the pyramid is far more mysterious than we've ever imagined. hidden within its chambers and rooms that we thought ever existed. There could be all sorts of crap in there, to be honest. This is a lot of stone. In fact, the French calculated that when they were in Egypt, they calculated that there's probably enough stone there to put a wall all the way around France. I think it would be like 6 meters high or something. 6 meters seems a lot. I think it was 10 foot high. Let's say 3 meters. But yeah, that's a lot of wall all the way around France. That's not big enough to straight jump over. That's too big, sorry, to jump over. So, it's a lot of stone. But anyway, yeah. But yeah, it could be all sorts there. But yeah, 2 years. 2 years. After 2 years, a paper was published in Nature announcing that a massive void was discovered within the Great Pyramid of Giza, just above the famous Grand Gallery, measuring at least 30 metres. Let's say now they think it's 40 metres. So 30 metres is 100 feet, so it's probably a bit more. The discovery constituted the first major discovery made at the Great Pyramid since the 19th century. So, I mean, this was performed by people known as the Scan Pyramid Project, which they first were founded in 2015. The project has seen experts from France, Japan and Egypt participate in one of the largest studies of the pyramid ever attempted. So, yeah. I mean, nice picture of the pyramid there. But yeah, I mean, scanning it, the article goes on. Scan Pyramids, as the project is called, is a cross-disciplinary, multinational archaeological mission that uses state-of-the-art, non-destructive methods to scan various monuments for hidden cavities, chambers, or structures. This is achieved by using infrared thermography and muon tomography. Muon tomography essentially uses cosmic ray muons to produce three-dimensional images of volumes using information stored in the cloud scattering of the muons. Muons can penetrate much more deeply than X-rays. This is the reason why experts use muon tomography to image through much thicker material than X-ray-based tomography. In other words, muon radiography will help detect differences in density inside the pyramid, providing experts with an internal image of an ancient monument. So another way to say that would be these scanning methods would be the equivalent of where we use magnetic resonance imaging to get a more detailed internal body picture than perhaps an X-ray. Get a bit more nuance and resolution with an MRI or maybe a CAT scan. And that's a similar thing to what we're doing in these pyramids, but rather than vibrating and you know, measuring the sort of magnetism, because of MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, this is just doing it in a slightly more sophisticated way, using the sort of movement of the particles. It sounds pretty funky, and it is pretty funky in sci-fi, but it's not that out there, you know. Don't be too blown away by the use of muons as a scanner sort of thing. I mean, either electronics are using quantum mechanics all the time. Anyway, just like electron exchange and stuff. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So yeah, go and check them out. I'll say the Scan Pyramids. I mean, I wonder what else they've done. I didn't know about these people. Like I said, I didn't know about this big void. So, I mean, wow, man. I had no idea. But it just shows you can't catch everything. And if you don't keep up with it, you don't keep up to date, do you? So we've got to stay on top of things. You know, and that's why we have to have these conversations and talk to each other. Because end of day, we can't all catch it all. We can't. You know, we've got to talk to each other. We've got to be buddies. We've got to agree to disagree and try and be reasonable, because we can't all catch it all. We just really can't. It's just, there's so much out there, and it's, you know. So one person can make a difference. Don't get me wrong, but at the same time, working with other people is, it makes it so much easier. They're standing on the shoulders of giants, man. Because you can, I might have said this before, but you can read a book that somebody took 10 years to make, and you can get through that in a day, potentially, or, you know, say a week. You could process that and kind of know it. You could maybe read it again another time, but you know, in a few hours or a few days or a few weeks, you can get 10, 20, 30 years worth of information. And that's how you can know stuff. That's why, when that's called generalizing. We don't necessarily have to be experts at everything, but, you know, we can speculate, can't we? And we can still read this stuff, still read it ourselves and still talk about it, you know. And that outside-of-the-box thinking sometimes really leads to stuff. I mean, there's the famous story, I don't know if it's true or not, but there is a bit of a story about how there's supposed to be an intern at Apple that had the idea to just stand the chips up instead of them being flat, and they get loads more memory in there. And it was like a revelation. I don't know if that story's true, but you can see the metaphor. They can get too close to something, and, you know, and an outsider can come up with a simple solution. So, yeah, scanning pyramids and a great void. I mean, that's it. It just shows how many mysteries there are and things to still have. And that's why when I found that other article there and tried to update on my knowledge of Egypt, I'm like, man, there's still loads of stuff. And that was the Saqqara complex, enough stuff around there, Toya. There's so many things, like I say, it spreads across all the kingdoms that we know about. But the fact that she's unknown, it seems weird. So I thought I'll have a look who this Teti guy is. Because I heard about it, it's Teti, who's supposed to be a god as well. I thought, hang on. Teti got my head thinking, linking it to Tahuti. Tahuti, I thought maybe Toph. Toph the Atlantean. Now, so I thought, I'll have a look into this. And it said, and where my thinking went and the information I found was, okay, I'm thinking Teti felt similar to Tahuti, who I thought was Toth, who is Hermes. Right. So I checked if Hermes and Tahuti and Toth and Tahuti are all the same people. Right. And so I've checked all them out, and it was definitely connected. I've checked it, and yeah, Hermes is well known as to be Toph the Atlantean. He's well known as to be Tahuti, of African history. And so King Teti is thought to be a god, and Hermes was a god. Tahuti's a god. So again, okay. And these are about wisdom. These are, you know, the Hermetics, and these are doing the same stuff. They're thinking the same things. They're doing exactly that same thing. Traveling up your kundalini, traveling up your spine, getting your spiritual evolution, getting, you know, they're blatantly doing that. That's the whole thing. And the theory is everyone wants to be buried near to him. You know what I'm saying? So like I say, I did a bit of a quick check. And interestingly, I found that it was describing that in the gods of Kemet, the gods of Egypt, you've got this one called Djuti. It's yet another spelling, Djuti. Tahuti, Djuti, Toph, and Hermes, all the same boat. Probably better known as Toph, his Greek name, Djuti, or Chihuti, or Tuti, but it's Djehuty here. Was the principal deity of a site called Kemenyu in Middle Egypt. However, it's thought that he originated from the delta because one of the administrators in the area had ibis as a symbol, and the ibis bird. Djuti was depicted as an ibis sometimes, as a bird. Okay, so the ibis bird with the head of one, all right? One myth relating to his birth was that he sprung from the head of the god Set. Djuti played a key role amongst the Kemet gods. He was the inventor of writing, okay? Lord of the Moon. And in this capacity, he was also seen as the Lord of Time, the Reckoner of Years. This guy was Time Lord. Hermes, Time Lord. Tahuti, Time Lord. Toph, Time Lord. Just saying. Carrying on. Freaking Time Lord. Okay, yeah, so I was like, what about, okay. So Teti. Okay, so is this all the same person? And if so, then is Teti and Tahuti the same then? If so, right, then look, I went and I looked some pictures as well. I just put, same again, just put Tahuti and Teti in a Google search. You can see it there, look. It's in a Google search, Tahuti and Teti. See what I thought, let the algorithm do some work for me. Yeah. Got this, it is from somebody's Facebook page, mind you. But I got this image, which comes up in a few places. I didn't find the source exactly. But this is a depiction. It says the title of it is Anointed by Toph, King Teti Tahuti. Of pre-dynastic period of Kemet. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it is the same guy, according to this just innocent little image here, which I found a few places, but I couldn't find what a title for it was, other than it is anointing. That is what's happening. And you have got, you know, Toph and the Ibis Bird. Yeah. So, I don't know. So I think this is about anointing. And this Teti guy, I mean, it's Tahuti Hermes. So that this Doja pyramid and this Saqqara complex, where this unknown queen is, it looks like that's you know, where Hermes is buried, kind of thing. Do you know what I'm saying? And I'm thinking, and also as well, says it, you know, it mentions it's representative of the, you know, the Ibis bird. You've got the bird heads and stuff, right? And so it's represented as an ibis bird, but also is also represented, it shows you here, and there's other references that he's also represented as a baboon as well. Tahuti is a baboon, but also a bird. I think, and hang on, is this a person or is it a bird or is it a baboon, right? And that, and then obviously I put them two things together and I'm thinking, hang on a minute, a reptile is a bird and a baboon is a mammalian. I don't know. Just a side note, is that with reference to mixing the mammalian with the reptiles, the reptilians and the, I don't know. Because, well, how about this? Because in those days, in ancient Egypt, well known, the pantheon of gods, you've got Ra and his great rival, Apophis. It was supposed to be a serpent, lived underground, in, like, in the darkness, and Ra's the light, the sun, and there was always warring. So I don't know. Is that two different sides, or is it representative of dark and light, or is it the fusing together of them both? You know what I'm saying? Or is it reference to, like, the stitching, Zachariah stitching thing, and anarchy and genetic manipulation? Who knows? But thought it worth mentioning that this guy is both a reptile and is a bird and a baboon, which is a reptile and a mammal. Or is that about balance? You see, it gets interesting. It just gets weird. So yeah, I just thought I'd just throw that out there and see what you think. Because I don't know, do I? But anyway, moving on. I found actually from that Google search, found this video as well. This guy does a quick explanation. I just thought it'd be nice to see an actual depiction of Toph actually from Egypt on the walls. So this is from a channel then, which is, it will just highlight that there. This is a TC Clake Charles's channel about Kemet and Kemet spirituality in the Bible. So we'll see what this guy, Ashra Kwezi, that's it. That's a bit like, pronounced a bit like Bichweezy. It's interesting. Anyway, side note. Yeah, Ashra Kwezi is going to do a little bit of a talk about he calls it Neta Tehuti. Neta means God. God Tehuti, which we now know is really Hermes and Toph the Atlantean, sort of saying dude. So this is a bit of a revelation for me, but here's some confirmation. Visually and from this guy who's also studies his stuff. So yeah, let's have a quick check.
As we open up with Tehuti, who represents the netter of intelligence, the netter of wisdom. In fact, it was through Tehuti that the per netter, or the divine house, was created by Tehuti's wisdom. Now, was Tehuti Tehuti a ibis bird with a human body? Mm-hmm. Tehuti represented ancient priesthood that came up out of Kush. In the Per Emeru, it is also Tehuti that wrote down your deeds on earth, long before John wrote down deeds. It's Tehuti that gave the call that a Set would have a holy birth and immaculate conception, long before it was corrupted by Christianity and turned into Gabriel. So Tehuti represented all the great wisdom of Kemet. But Tehuti also had teachers too, and that is Khepri. Khepri was the beetle at morning time, like now, coming into being. Khepri represented us at our time of our beginning. Like 6 o'clock in the morning, that's your Khepri, that's your beginning. At high noon, that is your maturity, that is your Khepri. And also at 6 o'clock in the evening, that's where I'm at Tum. I'm becoming an elder now. By following that time clock, just like you have a watch on your hand to follow your course of your day, you equally had that time to follow what you had to do before you left this physical body to go on. So Tehuti is here.
I just want to give a quick mention here that, he mentioned Khepri, which had a quick look into. We'll mention Khepri next, but I don't know if anybody's noticed, just before he says it, we got the depiction here of Toph. Just move the cursor around so you can see. It's the obvious character, he's looking at there. But I don't know if you can see it. He's about to mention it. I saw it and was going to mention it, and then the guy brings it up. I paused it at this point, actually. But yeah, check down here, look. See this area? See if we can zoom in and if it's possible. There we go. This bit here, I was noticing this bit looks a bit like a pointy bit, head, da 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 da. He's holding like a cone or a pen, like he's scribing. He's got, because he's, the god of writing, knowledge. Got this kind of pointy bit, a little bit bird like, and then this long bit going down here. You can't see it so well, but it's very faded at the bottom. It kind of carries on. This section, so we've got a depiction of Hermes holding up his right hand with a little pointy thing. It's kind of worn out. And his other arm's going down, holding something. It's like a staff. But the staff continues all the way to the floor, if you just about see. And it's kind of straight on one side. If you notice the way that's just like a straight line, where the face sticks out, but on the back of it, it's all like jagged, or it's lots of little horizontal lines versus one vertical line. And one side of the staff depicted as a straight vertical line, and the other side is depicted as a bunch of horizontal lines. And I thought, surely that's got some kind of symbolic meaning. I'm going to speculate and guess. I don't know, is it like balance and duality, like one's singular and smooth, and the other one's many, a multitude, and small. Instead of one long run, you've got a smooth one long run line, and then the other is lots and lots of really small lines. So there's opposites there going on. I don't know if that is. But anyway, I'll zoom back out. Let this gentleman just continue his little talk here. A few more minutes.
Physical body to go on. So Tehuti is here, although you see him, it's been cut out, some of his face, But you see the long bill symbolizing writing, because it was from, it is said, it's from Tahuti's fingers that wrote the Per Imhuru. When you saw the red, when I showed and did the comparison with the Bible, and showed where Men Kaparatiti Maids was talking, but when Amma referred back to him as in red,
yes.
Whereas Tahuti did use his fingers to write the Per Imhuru, or coming forth by day and by night. It's through his great wisdom that all others and the Nisu had to come before Tahuti to achieve that great wisdom. So you see that all the writing that we see here, he's also got the staff of millions of years, calculating time itself, because he also personified time. He personified the celestial bodies of the universe. After all,
Time Lord, told you. Or should I say, Time Lord. Anyway, carrying on.
Well, his celestial body is what? The moon, the lunar cycle. And by using that migratory bird that had a migratory cycle, then they used that to correspond with the phases of the moon. So Tahuti became that netter to represent the lunar principle. So again, one of the highest principles of Kemen would be Tahuti, and then before Tahuti would be Khepri. So if we want to find out who is Imhotep's teacher, Tahuti. Who's Tahuti's teacher? Khepri. So when we think of those pyramids that were built, then we have to go back to the priesthood.
Okay, so, yeah. I mean, it mentions there it's about, it mentions there, you know, Imhotep. It mentions however Imhotep's teacher, that's Tahuti. Tahuti had a teacher too, Khepri. So it's like, well, hang on a minute, Tahuti's Hermes. Right, so it's a bit like, hang on, did Einstein have teachers? Must have. Right, we've all had teachers. Did he, do you know what I'm saying? How far, because you think, I pick Einstein just random because it's like, oh, thought of as a really super smart person. I think, has he got, did he have teachers? You know, these really smart people, do they have teachers themselves? Do you know what I'm saying? So it's like, of course they do. I mean, perhaps not the Einstein in this example, but in this, the gods and the pantheon and going for, yeah. Hermes, for me, at least in my mind, you read about Hermes, thrice great. You call someone thrice great, really good. He's a god, but got a teacher. So there's a level above Tahuti. And you're thinking, oh, yeah, levels keep going. You know, so as wise as Hermes Trismegistus was, going to have teachers. So I thought, yeah, that's pretty cool, really. Like I say, because it was this, you know, the god scribe sort of thing. But anyway, let's have a look at this Khepri, because I've not heard of Khepri. It's spelt in a way that you might not. I spelt it like a Khepri, you know, a Ford Khepri. But no, it's spelt with a K. Khepri. Khepri. So then Khepri, also translated as Khepera or Khepa or Khepra or Khepri, is a scarab-faced god of ancient Egyptian religion, who represents the rising or morning sun. By extension, can also represent creation and the renewal of life. So I thought, okay, yeah. Yeah, all right then. So depicted as a beetle ties in with part of the kind of mystery of that show, funnily enough, which features a mysterious boy who's got a little black pyramid, right? And I thought, well, isn't that just in my own personal world? Isn't that such a strange synchronicity that in this show, the boy's got a little beetle? And it's not a scarab. It's a very small beetle. What's small? It's a decent-sized beetle, actually. Maybe the size of a thumb. Just a decent-sized beetle. But it's got, like, kind of aqua, kind of rainbow-coloured back. Okay, so colourful beetle. And in this TV show, 1899, about its mysterious ship, and there's a sister ship, it went missing, you know. And there's this boy running around. And there's like these dead end secret passages that like dead ends, but this boy puts a bug on the ground and it opens up a doorway into like another place. And you're like, what? And it's a beetle. And I thought, what are the chances that this happened to be watching that show recently? It's got a beetle opening doorways, digging around, end up discovering some old, you know, building his stuff and foundations. Goes home, goes on the internet to see if there's any new discoveries. Egypt thing comes up, and then it turns out it's about passing through this afterlife, an unknown queen, unknown pyramid, in an area that's full of mystery. And then there's a beetle turns up, a bit random, you know, Khepri, beetle-faced god. Never even seen a beetle, never heard of it. Otherwise, what a chant, that random beetle thing. But is it random? Don't know what it means. I just thought, isn't that just a strange oddity? So I thought I'd share that with you. Just, yeah, it's an oddity. As I noticed, Egyptian mystery schools and the Greek Elysian mysteries have a theme of a person that is known as a sort of a guide or a teacher opening doors in some way, you know. Because obviously the Greek stuff is basically just recreating this ancient, this lost Egyptian mysteries. And given that Hermes has always had the staff, it was all about, you know, assisting to have that spiritual enlightenment with that dude, it seems to me. So I thought, yeah, things all seem to fit together. And everyone in history ever that ever saw him would be like, yeah, I'd say he was, you know, I would say the main focus. Like revered everywhere. Is everybody's main focus. So if Hermes is involved in all of this, and he's all about this metaphysics and hermetics in order to perform like sort of magical acts, and the whole of Egypt, you have to remember, their entire thing was based on, their entire religion and culture was based on, like, I suppose you could say in a sense it was based on harmony. It wasn't just sun worship, no. Their entire culture was based on acoustics. Okay, but anyway, yeah, sticking with Hermes, we'll get to that, but sticking with Hermes, I'm thinking, well, hang on, so he's buried there apparently, then. And so that pyramid of Doja pyramid, that marks that whole area where he was and stuff spreading out from then. It's across all the ages known of Egypt, so they've got me loads of stuff there still, I reckon. And it said that the centre of all of this was Khnemu, that same place. King Teti. So yeah, it all comes in together. And I didn't know this either, that Hermes, Hermopolis, that's the centre of where he was in his teaching. And it's the same place as Khemenenu. So it's like, yeah, this is all known. And that is now Hermopolis. That's in a modern day Alashmanin. It's miles from Saqqara, but I just think, I don't know, it's just as if not to emphasize it enough. Hermopolis was also known as Magna Hermopolis and Parva Monopolis. Magna is Latin for great, and Parva is from Hinduism, and it's a central theme of Dharma. Right, with devotional and philosophical content written in 18 books called Parvas. And so check this quote out. It's from, I found it on Sophopedia. It's from Asclepius the Third. Okay, so ancient Egyptian roots of the Principia Hermetica. Hermes' big book, right? Principles of all his alchemy that he discovered. Okay, it says, do you not know, Asclepius, that Egypt is an image of heaven? Or to speak more exactly, in Egypt, all of the operations of the powers which rule and work in heaven have been transferred to earth below. Asclepius III. 24B. So I'm like, wow, okay. So the ancient Greek, they're talking like in those times, they're talking like not only heaven's been brought to the earth, and we talk, and they say that in terms of the archaeologists in the modern times. Oh, it's like they're laying out the heavens, look, and they've lined up the pyramids with Orion. But it's like, no. Yeah, they're doing that. But it's even more literal, according to people at the time, saying, no, they've literally brought the powers and the rules of the heavens into that place. And what were they doing then? Well, the whole thing was based on acoustics. The whole thing was based on acoustics, right? So, I don't know, it takes me back to, it seems as this, it, this takes me back in my thinking to what's known as the perennial philosophy. So, what I'm going to do here is, I'm just going to have a quick little music break, make a drink, and then we'll come back, talk about the perennial philosophy and why Hermes counts with this missing from the record, newly discovered ancient Egyptian queen. Okay, and just before I play a little track here, just while I make a drink, I'm just going to leave you with a little snippet to think on. But this queen that was found nowhere on any of the walls where they found her, was her name written? Did they really work to find it? She's not advertised. That I find quite curious. But anyway, let me just quickly play a little bit of drum and bass, and then I'll come back when I've got a drink, and we'll have a look at the perennial philosophy, Hermes, and why it ties into this queen. Anywho, Exile Minds podcast, Liam Martin. We'll be back in just a sec. Back to the show, Liam Martin, your host, Exile Minds podcast. It's Saturday the 26th of November. Thanks for bearing with me. Yes, so continuing with the show. Oh, by the way, if you're watching the video, I've got myself a nice new bunker. I was jealous of Mike's, my friend Mike's, so I've gonna go and sort one out, look, and I found a bunker off world. So there we go. Anywho, little trick there. Little active Stargate. Yeah, we'll work on the bunker. We'll get it outfitted. It's looking good. Anyway, okay. Back to the show then. So, we've got, so far then, we've got this queen. It's been discovered in ancient Egypt. Ancient Egyptian queen from the New Kingdom era in Saqqara in Egypt. Buried in the area where a lot of people wanted to be buried, close to King Teti, which turns out to be Teti Tehuti, Toph the Atlantean, Hermes, Trismegistus. This is a really central figure in history, really, really important. And it's part of that whole teachings of Hermes, and the whole story of Hermes is all part of a lineage of quite important information that's been sort of passed on to humanity many, many times. It's a very philosophical and religious stuff comes from this, and this is what the perennial philosophy is about, that it's the notion that there's a original source knowledge, original body of knowledge, where all of the sort of religions are coming from. And so we're seeing a few crossovers here. You know, we saw that Hinduism kind of, and the Greeks and the Egyptians all kind of like talking about the same guy as being like a god and a bringer of knowledge. Okay. But then this queen, then there's not much to go on her. This mystery queen. So let's see what else we've got here. I just wanted to quickly mention Cher International, though, before we move on. Because, funnily enough, there's a guy who volunteers for Cher International. What's Cher International called? There's a guy called Dick Larson that volunteers for Cher International. That is the reason he was doing a show once on Fringe FM, Lighting the Void with Joe Roop, and I called in. Didn't really call on radio shows, and that's how I fell into all of this. Through he was describing some weird stuff, and I've had similar experiences, so I thought, yeah, that's I'll call in. And he kind of explained it a lot, and he volunteers for Cher International, and they tell people about Buddhism and the next Buddha called Maitreya, and it's a lot of the information has been brought forth. So they say. So all of this says through a guy called Benjamin Kramer, C-R-E-M-E, a British guy who did a lot of channeling. He's passed away now, but he did a lot of channeling, wrote a bunch of books. Now, I didn't necessarily used to be down with channeling and stuff, but I've come to change my mind on that. It's open, it's difficult, but yeah, Benjamin Kramer, Cher International, they share all the information to do with Buddhism. And you know, Buddhism's, you know, they're not like, they say, they're like, yeah, this is what's going down. It's not like he's just independently come up with stuff. But yeah, Cher International, check it out. Just quickly share that page, because it just ties in, because I'm kind of starting my podcast now, just on this show of Mike. This is the second sort of official start episode, and this is sort of where I started. And it was in Fringe FM. Was founded by a guy who's a Golden Dawn magician. Sounds epic, but you know, he's been inducted through that. Just so happens. And the first time I called in a show and then ended up falling into radio came off the back of these teachings from Buddhism that have been channeled by a guy called Benjamin Kramer. And they tell people all about it. It's loads of books, a few videos. It's about that. It's fascinating to read about Maitreya. And it's about, this is the perennial philosophy that Aldous Huxley talked about, where there's this information has been with us since the dawn of man. All the religions are coming from, you know, an original body of knowledge. And this is describing, you know, a lot of that stuff and where it's sort of going next into, from the Buddhism angle. I just wanted to give that a mention because I've presented to you that in Egypt, they've made a discovery of a pyramid and an unknown queen. And I'm tying it into Hermes and this perennial philosophy, because he's intrinsic to it. And that seems to be where he's buried, in Saqqara, or at least it's central to, you know, that's where it was. He's definitely in Egypt, in Hermopolis, but that place there, I don't know. It seems to be buried there, from what they're saying, my understanding. So yeah, and like I say, and Hermes, as great as he is, I'm much banging on about Hermes trusting justice. Turns out, as we found out from this video here, Ashura Kwesi, I didn't know about this. So the metaphysics of people who study chemetology, yeah, some really cool stuff. But yeah, so we found out from that yeah, Hermes had a teacher that we can name called Capri, which was the sort of beetle face. Keeps coming back around, so I don't know. But anyway, moving on. So we've got Cher International. So this queen then, this Queen Neith. I looked up the name Neith to see if it's come up anywhere else, because there's not really any information on this person. There's a mystery, right? So let's have a look what we got. Wikipedia entry: Neith, wife of Pepi II. Neith was an ancient Egyptian queen consort, one of the principal queens of the Old Kingdom, Pepi II. So the Queen Neith was named after the goddess Neith. So I'm thinking, are they just picking the names of goddesses? Because I'm thinking Tepi and Pepi sound the same too. Teti and Pepi, like Tehuti and Teti, turns out to be the same. So I'm thinking, is this the same guy? Or are they just picking the names again? I don't know. I just thought it was very... What to do with that? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know. It's just similar. But then it mentions like Imhotep as well. You got this similar name thing, which at least with the Tehuti situation, it did kind of pan out. So I don't know. There's a reference for Neith in history, but a different one. And here's the goddess it mentioned that she's named after. So Neith the goddess is one of the longest spans of import in ancient Egypt pantheon. So you're one of the old school veterans, the old gods. She was worshipped from early in the pre-dynastic era through to the arrival of Roman rule. She was a goddess of creation, wisdom, weaving and war. That's quite a combination, isn't it? Creation and war is like destruction. So two opposite ends, wisdom and weaving. In addition to being worshipped as a funerary goddess. Neith was said to be there at the creation of the world, and some even called her the mother of Ra. So in that sense, at least, the mother of Ra, she's then above Ra, sort of ranked above. So the sun god, yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if this necessarily means anything exactly. But then, say the guy mentioned Imhotep in the video. Imhotep's teacher would have been Tehuti. Tehuti's teacher was Khepri. What if I know Nithotep? I don't know. How's this fix? This is from the first dynasty. It says, Nithotep was an ancient Egyptian queen consort again, living and ruling during the early first dynasty. She was once thought to be a male ruler. Her outstandingly large mastaba and royal shirki surrounding her name. Something surrounding her name. On several seal impressions previously led Egyptologists and historians to the erroneous belief that she might have been an unknown king. What they're saying there is that whenever this Nithotep was represented, the symbols were too grand, too big, and grand and illustrious. So assumed it's a king. Didn't realise that there's a woman at the time that had that much kind of weight in society. As the understanding of early Egyptian writings developed, scholars learned that Nithotep was in fact a woman of extraordinary rank. She was subsequently considered to be the wife of unified Egyptians' first pharaoh, Nama, and the mother of Hor-Ara. So I'm thinking, okay, is it possible that that's the same woman all the way through? From the first kingdom to the first dynasty, and then all the way through. I don't know. Are they just picking the same names? Are they related? Passing down like a family name? I don't know what any of this stuff is. But then I think, well, isn't it curious her name's not written down? Has she been expunged from history, I'm wondering? That's sort of where I'm going. Or are they just passing names down? Or is it that this person's been alive the whole time? It seems nuts, but then we're getting scientific advancements now, talking about extending telomere lengths and longevity. You've got Jeff Bezos saying, I think it was Bezos, putting up a load of money, saying basically here's a blank checkbook, figure out immortality, right? So it's in the scientific zeitgeist to talk about that. And if you check the original king's lists and look at the times of ruling, there's people are living for really long. And of course the Bible's got plenty of people that's lived for, you know, centuries. So I don't know, they lived all the way through. I don't know what this is. It's a bit mysterious. prefer to not have a name written. You know what I'm saying? And so if it was the same Neith, then it's like in one era, a name's in big, bold letters. And then in another era, assuming it was the same person, now they're not really writing it down. So I don't know. And like I say, this with books and, you know, TV shows, a Stargate franchise, and then you've got remote viewers viewing Egypt and confirming a lot of this stuff, especially the fighting between Apophis and Ra. They've remote viewed that. Like, man, that was, you know, if that's to be believed, then that some of that stuff actually happened, you know, happened here. And like I say, this goes back to the perennial philosopher. These are teachings that are keep coming back to us and getting lost or taken away or oppressed, or they're only here for a certain amount of time and they naturally come away. But it's all about this perennial philosopher. And again, in Taoism, this ties in with Taoism too. Because we think about the afterlife and we think about a pyramid shape. It's like it's a vortex. And in Taoism, you've got two vortexes pointing towards each other, and we exist in the center of the two vortexes. And we see that in energy models, and we also see that in science with physics for energy transfer, the donut shape, the toroid shape, is the most efficient shape for energy transfer, which is why your blood cells are shaped like that. So if you, I don't know, you've got a pyramid, you're trying to go up, as above, so below, trying to go up, I don't know. And because in Taoism, that's why you got this kind of thing in Taoism. You're bringing those two vortexes together. Yeah? As above, so below. Going up the chain, the Hermes staff. I don't know. I think they're teaching us stuff here, definitely. And so in Taoism, then I'm thinking, well, with that vortexes facing each other, what about the Giza Power Plant? Christopher Dunn book, Giza Power Plant. Because, okay, so this brings me to Christopher Dunn, the Giza Power Plant, because in his thesis, which seems to have a lot of weight, really, and it ties in with Egyptian tradition, like I say, points in Egyptian science were based on sound and acoustics, and they worked with stone in very sophisticated and efficient ways. Right. And the archaeology is, as Dunn puts it, the archaeology we're finding is just like the bones, right? So where's the flesh? And this is where the flesh is. You've got to look these in-between bits, pull these threads, I think, and have the greater understanding of what these things mean, right? Like, as Christopher Dunn said, it's more subtle to find the flesh. You've got to be more subtle with it. And it also said, this is a quote, and indeed, if you literally do listen, you can hear the frequencies in those temples, and many people will attest to it. And it's true, these things are tuned. They're built to be tuned. In fact, some have speculated that bent pyramid is meant to be, it looks kind of wrong, but it's kind of, some argue that the height that goes up before it bends makes a kind of parabolic kind of, it makes for like a dual frequency thing, but speculation on that. But yeah, it was all, you know, many people can attest to the frequency aspects. And of course, in this region, Saqqara, we famously got the Serapeum in Saqqara, containing huge polished stone boxes. And I remember that there used to be a radio show hosted by James Swagger. I used to really like that show. It was on YouTube and just vanished one day and he disappeared. Just gave up, that's what I guess. And he moved, left country and just gave up the whole thing. But you know, James Swagger, I remember he'd been to Egypt a few times and he talked about the Serapeum and said he'd been in one of them and tried like meditating, like making the om sound. And he said it amplifies it and makes it resonate and ring out for much longer. It's all very acoustic, you know. And the whole culture is based on that. So it's, well, yeah. And Dunn describes in his book how the central focus on acoustics meant that people in ancient Egypt were in a constant state of cosmic consciousness, which would kind of makes like there was no need for a concept of like a church and modern priests, because they're all redundant in that scenario. Everyone is just having their experience and Christopher Dunn openly said that when he was to start writing his book, he was poo-pooing all the New Age concepts, all them kind of notions, because he wanted his theory to be taken seriously. He's trying to look at it as an engineering perspective. So he wasn't buying into any of that New Agey stuff. You know, he wants his theory to be taken seriously, but he says after several trips and having several experiences that were a bit odd, he said that, you know, you quote, really can't prove some things. You have to experience. I mean, that can be, it's true to be said for a lot of stuff, actually. In fact, I've mentioned this before, but if you go and study person-centered psychotherapy, one of the first things they're told is, we can't teach you how to become a therapist. You've got to teach yourself. We can teach you the theory and teach you how to go about stuff and guide you, but you need to develop yourself into a therapist by going through the motions. Do you know what I'm saying? It's called experiential learning. And then they told you to go and get this book by Klob, which is like that, called experiential learning. You know, and it's like, existentialist, you know. But yeah, some things you just have to know. You have to do them. I suppose like a spiritual experience, if you've had one, you're like, you're in a knowing situation with it that you can't really give it to other people, can you? Sort of thing. Or we even say it with like a comedy moment or a pun. Oh, you just had to be there. You know. So yeah, he changed his mind on it and became a quote, he became a believer that these energies that still exist, you know, are there and are just like echoes of a civilization whose population were master engineers, musicians and very enlightened beings. And that seems to be the whole focus of it. And I remember, I think it was either from the Troubled Minds chat group and listeners, I think there was Enoch might have mentioned, Enoch or Matt, so it might have been in a conversation with them, mentioned that they used to have these kind of parabolic mirrors. Now we know that they say they used to direct light, archaeologists say using them as like to direct light down tunnels, but I think it was Enoch or Matt's Al talking about how they used to bounce them to bounce sound between each other. And I know that the courtyard outside the Great Pyramid used to be quartz, a few inches thick. There's a lot to be said for bat frequency there, you know. But I mean, even there's even a historical reference. It's an anecdote that's, you know, allegedly not true. But if this person attempted this, this is what I expect would happen. So I reckon it probably is true. It's a saving face exercise saying it's not. But here's a story, right? It's said that Napoleon Bonaparte, during the campaign in Egypt in 1798, was insistent on spending a night in the king's chamber alone. It's supposed to not be true, but the story goes that Napoleon emerged the next morning, white and shaken, and therefore refused to answer any questions about what had befallen him the night before. Not until 23 years later, as he lay on his deathbed, did the emperor at last consent to talk about his experience. Hauling himself painfully upright, he began to speak, only to halt almost immediately with the words, "Oh, what is the use? You'd never believe me," sort of thing. But that anecdote first comes around in the 70s, like 74, but where it was also mentioned by a guy called Ken Kesey, where Rolling Stones had sent him to go to Egypt. Ken Kesey was a big proponent of LSD, and Rolling Stone sent him to Egypt, and he reckons that he was sickened to death after a few minutes in the king's chamber, you know, referring to Napoleon. So I don't know if that Napoleon story is true, but I reckon a person like Napoleon, from what we hear of him, if he went into a consciousness like different frequency situation where it's by enlightened, that's probably gonna hurt you, or, you know, show you something you don't want to see, or, you know, if you went through the rites as well. I heard he went through the ritual. He didn't mention it in the quote, but I don't know. But yeah, same with like the psychedelic experience and the ego. You can't really go in it with ego, because it'll kind of, in a sense, it will beat you. It'll beat you up if you're going in with ego. It's like a big thing. Or just your ego just automatically hurts in that environment, sort of thing. So, yes, fascinating to think about. So, yeah, I'm just want to, just to wrap this up, I mean, I don't know, it's just, it's a bit of a weird one, really, but it's, yeah, the thing is, though, like I say, Dr. Robert Schock, he did date these things as being potentially a lot older, you know, and while it was controversial, we've got Göbekli Tepe now, Callahan Tepe, we know that, you know, there's some civilizations were that they're dated like twice as old as Egypt, Göbekli Tepe. So when Dr. Robert Schock did the geology on the Sphinx and said, look, this is from when it was raining, it's from weathering, how long ago when it was raining, makes it Egypt, you know, thousands of years older than four. Scholars didn't really like it, and he was being conservative. But since the discovery of Göbekli Tepe, now it's okay that civilizations were around and able to do these kind of things. So yeah, I think all in all, you know, it seems to me there's a missing chapter. There's probably more than one, actually, but at least with this Mystery Queen and Hermes, Toph, whatever, Tuti, Teti, being so central there and what those teachings were, and about those philosophers keep coming back in history, keep coming and coming and coming. And as we discussed in a magic show of Michael Strange of Troubled Minds Radio, even the people teaching this stuff will sometimes poo-poo it, to, you know, so everyone doesn't become an Ascended Master instantly. You know, if everyone did that, it'd be crazier. Everyone with, you know, magic spell fighting on each other. But no, I don't know. But yeah, these philosophies are important. It's important to look at these nuances, I think. So you get your compass set to weird, because you do. It leads you to places. It does lead you to places. So just to finish off the show, so regardless of the truth of these experiences, you know, these weird things keep coming up. I think it's clear to me there's so much evidence that these enigmatic civilizations, right, they've got stuff. They knew the goods on some stuff. They've got all that sacred geometry all over the world. They knew the stuff. So I think it's definitely worth checking out and pulling these threads and just having the discussion. You know, like I say, it's like digging for information, a bit like archaeology, digging for stuff. So it might be small little things and it might matter. And we've got to share them and share our research and just try and piece it all together. And who knows, you know, maybe that void above the famous chamber in the Great Pyramid, maybe that 40-meter void might turn out to be a death glider on Alkesh from like Stargate, like these things are real or something. But either way, it's about digging around, asking the questions, isn't it? So crawling in the dirt to find answers that might lead to enlightenment. Imagine that. Crawling in the dirt down to find answers that might lead up, as above, so below. Kind of reminiscent of the lotus flower, isn't it? So, I don't know. It's, yeah, see what you think. Put it in the comments anyway. I'd like to know what people think about this stuff, because I just want to try and progress, share my ideas, see what other people have got to say about this stuff, and then maybe start to try and get some answers together. So, dig around for information. You know, this is how it's done. Got to do the groundwork, literally. And yeah, so grab your spade and start digging, folks. You know. Anyway, let's get a. Yeah, let's have a quick. Yeah, I mean, literally, I mean, yeah, I'll just quickly show you this at the end. I mean, this is not exactly related, but look, here's another example. See, I've done some digging and found some stuff in my garden, and it's kind of ended up leading to this. But also, in this, like this Daily Mail article, I'll just try and put it in reader mode, get rid of them adverts, if you'll let me do it. Oh, yeah, a quick little picture of this. Yeah, the Serapeum, look, just before we go. Yeah, these Serapeum blocks, man. These are highly polished, super duper granite, like Dunn was saying. You know, the working is stone in ways that we can't do it, and they're acoustically tuned. And you'll notice in this picture here, look, you can't physically get these things around the corners, look. I don't even know how they got them in there myself. There's a big mystery about them as well. But yeah, it's this, it's a weird one. But yeah, in this Daily Mail article, I'm talking about digging, getting clues. I mean, it's not really relevant to the story in some ways, but it is, because they've tried to reconstruct this face of a 2,000-year-old pregnant mummy, first pregnant mummy ever found. And the same thing, digging through the stones and digging the dirt back, like a digging I did. It's heavy soil. It's heavy work. You know, it takes ages. I've found out, so I've got an appreciation for it. And the same with this. They've painstakingly tried to reconstruct what this woman would look like from, you know, a couple of thousand years ago. It's been mummified. These things take ages, ages and ages. I just thought, you know, it kind of reminds, you see in the TV show CSI, and they show you the bit at the end of the show where they get the evidence and catch the criminal, whatever, and they make it all look really trendy and cool, but that takes hours, days and days of testing, might be weeks. You know, it's just painstaking, failed result, trying to do the chemical analysis before you get the hit to find the thing to, you know, crack the case. You don't show all the legwork. So this show, I wanted to dedicate to, look, this is what you got to work with. And then, you know, just like a mummified nothingness, you know, I could bring it up to looking realistic. So yeah, it takes a lot of work. So I wanted to dedicate this show to the painstaking process to get this stuff out, digging around, getting stuck in, like I say, just to explore, just for the fun of it, to contribute to the world, whatever your reason, you know. Just think, yep, do it. Let's all share. Let's all talk to each other. Let's get this stuff cracked. And don't let this, all that division stuff get on top of you. Keep your frequency up. That's the other thing I want to leave you with. Make sure you keep your frequency up. That's what it's all about. It's all about distraction. Even Blavatsky and Theosophical Society and all your gurus from back in the day and Hinduism, but all the same, monkey minds, hard enough to get past your distractions, and in the modern world trying to distract you all the time. So keep your frequency up. Don't let the fear factor get you. Be nice to people. It's nice to be nice. It is nice to be nice. And yeah, take care of yourself, folks. I'll catch you all pretty soon. It's a quick impromptu on this one. Anyway, we take it easy. Exile Minds Podcast, Liam Martin. I'll catch you next week. Control the values.